You've been watching the Commonwealth Games. You might have noticed, apart from Australia's domination in the swimming, that a number of para sports are being televised. In the spirit of inclusivity, the Commonwealth Games have been making an effort to both expand the number of sports being para sports being competed in this year and to televise disabled athletes right alongside able-bodied athletes. But issues about inaccessibility, getting to and moving around the ground, are stark reminders that once the events are over, people with disabilities go back to lives where they are often excluded from mainstream society and consideration. Talking to us now about the Commonwealth Games Inclusivity Program is Dr. Simon Darcy, a professor at the UTS Business School. Thank you for joining us this morning, Simon.
Thanks very much, Sam.
So, Simon, can you tell us what the Commonwealth Games Inclusivity Program is actually is?
Yeah, it's twofold. First, there's the focus on the sport events themselves. So there's 38 separate medal events, and importantly, the medals for parasport count toward the medal count, whereas the demonstration sports at the Olympics don't count towards the medal count. And those sports that they are in are swimming, javelin, cycling, lawn bowls, table tennis, triathlon, and also importantly that there's an equal number of medal chances for both males and females.
Right. So there's actually some effort making this like legitimate sporting achievements and recognizing people for their legitimate sporting achievements rather than it being a sort of separate category.
Yes, correct. And that's from a para sport perspective, that these athletes aren't there because they're just there to participate. They've gone through a rigorous selection process and are recognised as the best from their countries in the particular classifications within those sports.
And this is probably a question that gets asked a lot, but is the concept of having para sports and putting them aside as a separate thing in general an exclusionary kind of way to approach it?
I think that you've got to look at it as the opportunity to participate the way the individual would like to participate. So in certain sports, a segregated activity like wheelchair basketball where everybody playing is identified as a person with a disability is perfectly logical for the Paralympic program where you want to an equal ability competing against another equal ability. But in a local community sport opportunity to get an understanding and raise awareness of disability, you might have people with disability playing against people without disability in a competition to foster mutual understanding.
Right. And Simon, there's the inclusivity program, obviously trying to make this into a legitimate recognition of people's sporting abilities. There are still issues regarding Brisbane public transport, that local trains are unaccommodating for people with movement disabilities in particular. Obviously, there are lots of types of disabilities, but can the inclusivity program actually work and be, you know, a real attempt while they're still being pretty exclusionary in terms of transport and so forth?
Yeah, and I mentioned at the beginning there's two parts to the inclusivity program. The other part is, of course, for spectators and others that are attending the event. And while there's been a tremendous effort and a political will to make these games as inclusive as possible for everybody attending, I'm quite worried, as many other people are, that Queensland Rail, for example, has just spent $4.4 billion on a new generation of rolling stock that overlooks some fairly basic considerations under the disability standard for accessible public transport. And that challenge has gone to the Australian Human Rights Commission, where they'll have to go through a retrofitting process, which is inappropriate, ineffective, and inefficient in public policy.
So while the Commonwealth Games are making this attempt, it's still not really helping much, or it's not reflecting back onto the wider society or even our whole society entirely.
Well, what it tells you is that some things are more valued than other things. But when, you know, these elite athletes and the spectators attending the game go back to their lives, then there's a whole series of systemic issues that are still occurring.
Mm-hmm. And do people who are able-bodied viewing the games or participating in the games have any responsibilities towards this end?
Oh, well, their responsibility is to, well, there's a certain amount of education that's going on with the para sports. So some of the commentators have done very well in explaining those sports and exposing people without disabilities who might not have that much experience to people with disability in a positive fashion, focusing on their ability and not on their backstory of whatever the story around their disability is a really positive way to move forward. And as Kurt Fernley did brilliantly in an interview the other night, recognised the privilege of the athletes attending, but also encouraged the improved employment rates of people with disability who are basically a lot more people living below the poverty line because they're not in employment.
Now, something that happens quite a lot is that people often just glaze over disability or treat it as like a sort of awkward category and try and avoid talking about it. Why are people so intent upon sort of making it invisible and look overlooking it rather than, you know, talking about it in, as, you know, normal people?
I think if people have any fears or uncomfortable or a lot of people just haven't had the opportunity to meet somebody with a disability, and there's, in an academic sense, there's contact theory, and the contact theory basically says people will have a much more positive disposition towards marginalised groups after they've met them and found that they're just people with a diversity of abilities or challenges. And and until people are put in a position to meet with people in all sorts of social circumstances, then they don't have the familiarity to understand that, well, actually, there's nothing particularly fearful. And even if I make a bit of a mistake with language, etc., it's all a learning process so we can move forward to be a more inclusive society.
And Simon, it seems very clear that there is, you know, quite a lot of societal stuff that we can do as people and as fellow human beings. But what is the role of government in something like this in regards to Commonwealth Games and transport and all of this? How does the government fit into this kind of responsibility to try and, you know, be an inclusive society?
Although, of course, Australia has actually done pretty well with respect to having an overriding Disability Discrimination Act. There's some very good programs with respect to trying to lead in the employment sense. And so government should be providing a facilitating infrastructure to encourage the private sector and, of course, the very big non-for-profit sector to open their doors in every sense to people of all types of abilities, mm-hmm. whether that be mobility, vision, hearing, cognitive, and there's a wonderful program on at the moment called Employable Me that looks at the issues of job hunting for people with neurodiversity. That's been very insightful.
And Simon, what's been your favorite, what event have you been looking forward to most or enjoyed the most at the Commonwealth Games?
Well, I think Fernley's marathon that's about to happen very soon. It's got to be the one that will be a terrific swan song. He got picked in the 1500 track, and whether he wins or places or wherever he comes, it'll just be a nice way to finish not only a career for a tremendous athlete, but also a person that recognises his privilege and has been working very hard in the advocacy area as well.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Simon.
Thanks for the opportunity, Sam.